Hey guys, and welcome to the first episode of Looking Back, a podcast where I find old things I've written and make you listen to them. Let's get into it. What I'll be reading today is called Home, and I wrote it in 6th grade when we were learning about ancient civilizations and Mesopotamia. Okay, here we go. A small sailboat cut through the water like a knife, the sails stretched tight with wind. I sit near the bow of the boat, crouched next to my mother, father, and little sister. Many other families sit around us, crunched together in little clumps. No one is talking. I stare out into the night. The dark water swirls and dances around the boat as we move through it. I can just make out the scraggly brush on the bank of the river through the light fog that has come to surround us. We must be getting close, I think to myself. I sit back and picture the new city that I will soon call home. We left our home, on my 11th birthday, to go to Lagash, another city along the Euphrates River. Our family needed to get a new start, so we packed up our lives with the hopes of restarting them again somewhere new. We are leaving because my father became sick, and none of the healers in Ur could help him. Lagash is said to have the best healers, so we're going there to try to make him better. Hours later, dawn begins to show its first rosy hues of morning. The faint light seems amplified after spending a night encased in darkness. The sailors aboard start making adjustments to the boat, pulling in the few ropes, and giving commands to the rowers to make the boat turn right. I can feel the boat shift as it changes direction, and I look to see where I last saw the land, but there is only water. A little boy sitting across from me whispers to his mother, "Are we here now?" "Not much longer," she whispers back, smiling. We soon arrive at the banks of the river, and I can make out a small, partially overgrown path winding through the grassy shore. The path leads to a high wall with an archway hovering above it. The path turns into a wide, flat road once it enters the city. Extending from the river are many canals filled with water, all flowing towards the city hidden behind the wall. "Look, Aya," I tell my little sister, "that's where we're going." We all clamber off the boat, jumping down onto the soft ground. I grab Aya's hand, and together we start running along the path. I can't wait to see the city, but part of me is afraid that it might not be the utopia I envisioned. My mother's voice brings me back to the present. "Hisaba, you must wait for your father and I." I stop running and drop Aya's hand. I look back down the path and feel shame creeping up my body. My mother is trying to get my father off the boat, who is stumbling around as he tries to step off. "He is sick," I remind myself. I have nothing to be ashamed of. I walk quickly down the hill and help my mother get my father off the boat. Aya watches us from the path, unsure if she should join us or wait. I catch her eye and motion for her to come down with us. We move slowly, the other families walking quickly up the path and into the city. Soon we are the last ones left, still struggling up the path. I look over at my mother, and she sighs. "Nisaba, take your sister into the city. You will meet your cousin at the marketplace. Wait for us there." "Thank you," I say, dipping my head in respect. "My cousin lives here in Lagash, and he is going to help us start our new life here." I take Aya's hand. Once again, we start up the path, walking this time. Almost to the gate, I stop. I lock eyes with Aya and take a deep breath. We turn back to face the city, and we start running as fast as we can. We burst out from under the overpass, and the light almost blinds me. When I can see again, I don't believe it's real. It's so beautiful. The rising sun reflects off everything, making it seem as if the entire city was made of gold. Small silhouettes of people pop out against the sun, their tiny shapes no bigger than ants. I look back at Aya, and I smile. This, I think to myself, is better than any utopia. 2 years later. I open my eyes, watery sunlight filtering through the cracks in the walls. I can hear sounds coming from our courtyard that tells me that my mother is making breakfast. I sigh and throw off the rough woolen blanket that never keeps me warm at night. I pull on my thick linen dress, careful not to wake Aya, who shares the room with me. I make my way through the dimly lit hall and into the courtyard. My mother is making barley cakes with dates, my favorite. I greet her and sit down on the ground, not minding that we have chairs and a table. I take a fired clay slab and put a barley cake and 3 dates on it. My mother smacks my hand with a wooden spoon that she's using to make the cakes. "Leave some dates for your sister," she says, and I unwillingly put one of my dates back. "Today, we are going into the market to barter for Unzi's goat. We need it to make milk and cheese. It's almost winter, and our useless old cow cannot sustain us through the months, and we can no longer borrow milk from others." I nod and begin eating my barley cake, saving the dates for last. I think about what she said about the coming winter, and how we need to stock up on food. We cannot repeat what happened last year. But I'm sure we'll be fine. Inside, we have clay jars filled with flour, wheat, barley, beans, chickpeas, lentils, and flax. Figs, apples, and dates are stored in jars, preserved in honey. In the city, many people eat meat, but we live in the more rural part of Lagash, and we live on mostly vegetables, sometimes eating fish if we can get it. We have a few jugs that I fill with water every morning for drinking and cooking. One jar is filled with oil, which we use for fuel for our lamps. "I think we'll be fine, Mother," I tell her, and she sighs. "I'm just nervous," she starts. "Last year we thought we had enough. We thought we knew what we were doing. We felt safe." Here she pauses, taking in a shaky breath. "But we still lost your father." The barley cake catches in my throat, and I look down to hide the tears beginning to pool in my eyes. I blink them away and look back up, knowing I must be strong. "He was sick," I remind her. "It's not your fault." She nods, and as she does, my cousin walks in. He came to live with us after my father died because we had no one to tend to the crops. With my mother and I always cleaning, cooking, and trading things, we had no time for them. Aya couldn't help because she was so young then, and because she fell sick months after we arrived here, getting fevers and vomiting. I was afraid at first. I thought she was going to die with my father already sick. It made me afraid of losing them both. But the healer says, with the help of Gua, the goddess of healing, that she will make a full recovery, so I don't worry anymore. The turnips and onions are ready for harvesting, my cousin says. 3 men from the city will help me harvest them, for 30 turnips and onions each. My mother sighs, running her hand through her hair. I can tell she's feeling pressured with my cousin, Saboom forcing any decision he comes across upon her. "Fine," she says, giving in. "What will we get?" Her eyes seem angry, but behind that they look sad and tired. "We will get about 70 turnips and 50 onions," he says. What the fuck? I'm so tired. Okay, ignore whatever just happened. I had like a mini breakdown, but it's fine. Okay, moving on. I'm just gonna start here. "We'll get about 70 turnips and 50 onions," he says, looking to my mother, waiting for her response. "That's fine," she says, looking away from both of us. "Nisaba, go do your chores. Leave your cousin and I to talk." "Yes, Mother," I say, dipping my head and leaving, not before secretly slipping another date from the clay bowl. I think she sees, but she says nothing. I go back to my room to see if Aya has woken up yet. She hasn't. I move quietly as I grab my linen shawl and wrap it around my shoulders. I then go outside through the main doors and around the back of our home, where we keep our 2 sheep and cow. I grab the clay jug that sits in the corner of their pen and begin milking our cow. The jug is only a fourth of the way full when no more milk comes out. Sighing, I bring the milk inside, then pour all of it into our churn. I put the lid on it and leave it to sit for around 2 hours. It needs to rest before it can turn into butter. I slowly make my way into our cooking area, which is around the corner from the courtyard. I peek around the corner to see if my mother and cousin are still talking. My mother has gone back to making the barley cakes, and I can't see my cousin. I go back into the cooking area, taking 2 jars with me, one filled with flour and the other filled with water. As I work, mixing the ingredients, kneading the dough, my mother walks in quietly, watching me work. Her breathing... her being here comforts me, and I relax as I knead the dough more and more, sinking into the familiar routine. I am about to turn around and talk to her, but just as I do, a scream breaks through the comfortable silence. My body goes cold, my eyes widening in fear as I recognize the voice. I lock eyes with my mother, and seeing her afraid makes me want to crumple to the ground. It's Aya. I run down the hallway and into our room. Aya is sitting up in bed, staring wide-eyed in terror at her arm. I follow her gaze and my heart drops. Purple spots ringed with yellow run all along her arm, and I can see some on her neck as well. Tears blur my vision as they run like tiny rivers down my face. The plague. Aya has the plague. Okay, I don't know how that ending was, but like, I thought it was good when I wrote it, so I'm gonna say that it's pretty good. And I love it. 10 out of 10. Anyway, I have no idea what I'm gonna do from here. I was originally gonna, like, unpack it, but it's, like, fictional, so there's not really much to unpack. So, yeah, that was it. Hope you enjoyed. Come back next week. There won't be anything to see, but you can come back and listen to this one again. Okay. Till next time, which there won't be. Have a nice day, I guess. Bye!